Welcome to the Uplift Chronicles, where we journey through the powerful stories of those who inspire, uplift, and make a difference. I am your host, Kofi Dake. In each episode, we dive deep into the lives, accomplishments, and the diverse backgrounds of remarkable individuals, particularly those of Afro heritage, who are changing the world one story at a time. Whether you are seeking motivation, connection, or a celebration of culture, you are definitely in the right place. So sit back and relax, and let's explore how lives have been uplifted, both in Africa and across the globe. This is the Uplift Chronicles.
Have you ever asked your question about what motivates you in life, or has anybody's story ever motivated you or given you the courage to do some changes in your life? Today is our first episode of Uplift Chronicles, and we have a very special guest in our midst today. On a high level, she has tons of experience, both internationally and locally. Her biography is pretty much long, but what I have to say, I will introduce her as Seram Ajangu, and then also we'll dive into some of her experiences, her stories, and everything that she has to tell us that will motivate us. Welcome, Seram Ajangu.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, actually, I'm very honored to have you as the first guest on this podcast. We're going to dive into so many sectors of life and find ways how to encourage people, mostly people of Afro origin. Okay, so I do know that you are educated extensively. Would you want to speak a little bit about your education?
All right. Well, I am educated as a medical professional. However, on my own, I have a passion for history and culture and language, especially African history, culture, and languages.
Yeah.
And so I actually speak five languages. Three of them are African languages, and three of them are European languages and two are African languages.
Yes. I was actually impressed when I've known you for some time too.
Yes.
And when I read that you speak five different languages.
Yes.
Which languages are those?
So I speak Ewe, which is Ewegbe. I speak Twi.
Okay.
I speak French and English and Spanish.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So for this medium, obviously we're going to be using English. Because both of us are more fluent in English, but there is also a common language that we share, which is Ewe.
Yes.
You know, from the same tribe.
Yes.
That speak that language as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So, what's your story in terms of where you've been? I know you've lived in so many countries.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So, from early on in my life, I had the opportunity to live in Mali and Togo. In Ghana. Mm. And then I came to the United States for university.
Mm.
And so that's really shaped who I am today. Mm. Really having those experiences out there, and it's really shaped my worldview as well. Mm. Being brought up in a Christian home, I held fast to the, teachings of Christ.
Yeah.
But growing up, coming into my adulthood, I came across some teachings that reminded me of some of the things that our Ewe elders used to tell us, which is that we are Israelites,
yes.
That the Ewe people originate from Northeast Africa,
okay.
And they come from Israel.
All right. So just for the audience, right now, the Ewe people, geographically, where can you find the Ewe people?
Okay, so you will find them in Ghana, mm-hmm. Togo, Benin, and the south and southwestern part of Nigeria.
Okay.
But those are the ones who speak Ewegbe. We know that Ewegbe has many dialects.
Mm-hmm.
So everywhere we live, we've also created other dialects.
Mm.
So in Togo, for example, we have a form of Ewegbe that is mixed with Ga,
okay.
Which is called Mina.
Mm-hmm.
So they speak that in addition to their P pure Ebe. Mm-hmm. In Benin, you have a mixture of Fongbe and Ebegbe, which the Aja people of Benin speak. And then in Nigeria, even people in Lagos and southern part of western Nigeria, you'll find people who speak a form of Ebegbe mixed with Yoruba.
Okay.
They call them the Ogun people.
All right. I didn't even know that you find Ebes in Nigeria.
Yes.
I knew of Ghana, Togo, and Benin, but I didn't know the Yoruba because
we even have Ebe people in Ivory Coast.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's very interesting because Seriam actually teaches on these subjects of the Ebe people extensively and how it also connects with religion as well.
Right.
During this podcast, I'll give an opportunity to actually share some of her sites or wherever that you can. If you are interested to go deeper into the Ebe people, the origin of the Ebe people, and how the religion, how the affiliation is with Israel.
Yes.
I know that you try to connect both of those together, some of your episodes. I think that would be a good platform for people to join in and listen to your teachings, right? Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, so what, I know you are a family woman.
Yeah. Yes.
So what motivates you? What is the driving force behind all the things that you do? Because you're in academia, you are in teaching, you are raising a family, and also I know you inspire a lot of people, especially young women, mostly in Africa, even though you reside in the United States, but you have a positive impact on people. What is the driving force behind that for you?
The driving force, I would have to say, is our identity when it comes to who we are as not just Ebe people, but people from West Africa, from sub-Saharan Africa,
right.
Our lost identity, coming to find out that we have an identity that is actually lost to us because outside of slavery and colonization, we don't really know our history. We don't, most Sub-Saharan Africans don't know that their people came from somewhere else.
Okay.
So knowing that really gave me a drive and a passion to dig deeper and help us, you know, and of course there's also a spiritual component, which is the biblical component,
right.
Which I'm really, you can say a fanatic of what is God's word.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are the people of the book, then that means those things that are foretold that will happen to us is going to happen to us. They are going to happen to us. So we have to awaken to the knowledge of self in order to know where we are headed.
Right.
So that's my passion. So I don't know if you know, but we also teach the Ebe language online. We've been teaching it too.
That's very interesting. Yes. I didn't actually know that you also taught the Ebe language, but I've seen other people doing that, teaching that. And it was an interesting question that I saw online where somebody was trying, and I think it's one of a prominent Ghanaian, that's YouTube channels.
Okay.
I think they're called Wodemaya. But he asked an interesting question, which he says, because he saw a picture of people with dancing backwards.
Yes.
Okay. And he asked a question that, can somebody explain to me where this tribe and other stuff?
Right.
And then I just picked up something that I know that you talked about how the Ebe people, migrated from a place called Moche in Togoland.
Yes.
And they had to, I think, do a certain dance. Can you explain that?
Sure, yeah. So that is part of our Exodus. Mm-hmm. That's the narrative of Moche. You know, our ancestors are very intelligent in that they place the stories in names. So if you take the name Moche, for example, what does it mean? Because, you know, we don't just name things anyhow.
Right.
Moche actually means Mochi, that is pierced through water.
Okay.
The geographical location of Moche that we know today in Togo has no natural body of water there.
Okay.
But the story at Moche is that we, the Ebe people, were under bondage of a very evil king. The king gave us impossible tasks to complete, and the people got tired, and they had a leader who led them out of bondage from that Moche place.
Okay.
So that's, I'm just abbreviating the story for the sake of time.
Yes.
So that story actually, when I fully explain it, you'll see that it has specific details that link it to the biblical Exodus. The king is Pharaoh. The leader is Moses. And the Moche has to do with the parting of the Red Sea.
Okay.
And when we say, when we tell the story and we say our people walked backwards, it doesn't mean they were physically walking backwards. It just means that after they left the place of captivity, they were wandering.
Okay.
You see, just like it says in the history of the biblical Exodus, they wandered for 40 years in the wilderness.
Okay. So that's really interesting, because I did a little bit of research, and what I found out was that these people were in the bondage.
Yes.
And this king actually, when they did like household choices with water.
Yes.
And or even laundry.
Yes. They would pour it on a specific part
on the wall to soften it.
Yes.
And eventually they were able to dig a big hole through it, and that's how they escaped. And then when they were going, because they wanted like maybe the guards and stuff like to have the perception that they were actually coming to the city, they walked backwards. That's what I read.
Because that story actually is in two phases.
Okay.
It is not only speaking of the biblical Exodus from Egypt, but it's also speaking of another captivity of the other people within an enclosed area with a wall. Just like you said, the leader advised them to pour their laundry water against the wall repeatedly over many years, and it caused that area on the wall to soften.
Yes.
And so they were able to cut a hole through when their captors were not looking. And through that hole, they walked, you know, out of that place. But I would beg to differ that they did not walk backwards from Togo to Ghana.
That would be a very long journey.
The old women and children, imagine the old women, pregnant women, everybody walking backwards. No.
Yeah.
Those are some of the things that's the genius of our ancestors I'm talking about.
Okay.
Where they place these statements in our oral tradition, which really should get us thinking. They are never always to be taken at face value.
Okay.
You know, there's actually a deeper meaning to certain statements they make when telling our story.
Right. I really like the way you go deep into this stuff. These teachings of yours you have, right, which are very, I think they're very deep, they're very enriching, you know, very historic facts, I believe, because you back them, mostly when I look at your work, you back them with a lot of research evidence and everything. Even you go to as far as the Bible. How have you seen the impact of this teaching, especially to the younger generation right now?
Yes, the impact that I'm starting to see, which I hoped for in the beginning, was that when we come to the realization of our identity, we as the youth, we should then know how to live our lives, right? Because if I know that these people were my ancestors, this is what they set out to do, I have to figure out, you know, is that what I want to do, right? And now, is the story about me individually, or is this now a collective story?
Right.
So then it should help shaping our lives so that we can walk according to our destinies, our collective destinies.
Okay.
So that's what I hope to see. And I do see that, you know, even though, you know, a lot of times people will say something like, well, the Bible is a white man's book. Right?
Yes.
But what I've been teaching and what I'm hoping and actually seeing that some of them are getting is that the Bible is not first a religious book. It is first a history book. It is a people who wrote down their histories and their customs, right? It's a history and culture book first and foremost, before it was taken and made into a religious artifact, right? Then, you know, sprouting out the Abrahamic religions, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, you know, without those religions, the Bible is purely a historical and cultural text.
Okay. Yeah. So how do you find this sort of reception among, let's say, Africans, where, like, look at some Africans, I wouldn't say everybody, every African, but I know there are many Christians who would actually argue and say the Bible is a spiritual book, it was written by divine inspiration and stuff like that. So they would say it's not a history book, but it's his. So how would you answer that question to Christians who push back on the fact that the Bible is not just, it's not a history, it's actually divine inspired?
Well, why can't it be both? Because if we take the Bible as it is today, it was not always the Bible, right? It was a set of writings that were found at later times, different times. We only have something called the Bible because the Romans took the writings and put them together and called it the Bible.
Yeah.
But even before these writings arrived, the stories were already there.
Yes.
The stories were passed down through oral tradition, which is what we continue in Africa till today.
Yes.
We pass down our stories from generation to generation orally. It just happens that some people ended up writing it. And yes, there are some parts where it says God said this, God said that. So we can say definitely there are some divine inspirations in there.
Yeah.
But the story is just a story of our ancestors. Okay. That's all it is, first and foremost. Before it was, you know, all those other things were added. There are chronicles about our past kings. There are chronicles about our battles. Some we won, some we lost. You know, that's history.
That's history, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, that's good. All right, so that's very interesting. I would encourage everybody to actually, you know, tune into your teachings, which are exciting.
We'll give them
information right after this. But I also like to go to your career, actually. You are a health professional.
Yes, I am.
Do you want to speak more about what you exactly do?
Well, I am trained as a nurse, and I've really been in all the echelons of nursing, pretty much. I've done bedside nursing. I've done administrative, case management, director, manager. Pretty much I've done it all. That's my career.
Right.
But honestly, my true passion, which I found out later on, this is after I became a nurse, is what we just talked about, the African history and those things and the languages.
Yes.
But I do, it's not to say that I don't enjoy nursing. Of course, you know, people need help and, you know, we want to help people as in all the ways that we can. And nursing just happens to be one of the ways I help. But my teachings is also another way that I help people.
Yeah. And I know you have a master's also in nursing.
Yes,
okay. That's good. Yeah. So that's very inspiring to young adults, especially women. I have a daughter who is also pursuing nursing,
because
we had that conversation and she's like, Dad, that my passion is nursing. That's what I want to go. I said, go for it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, So Ghana, you're originally from Ghana. You've lived in other countries.
Yes.
There's a lot going on in Africa right now. We see the Gen Zs in Kenya, fighting for certain course rights that they believe that they're entitled to.
Yes.
Okay. And then also Ghana, I know the future of Ghana is the youth. What is your perspective of the youth in Ghana, and what do you see things that are encouraging that we can say that Ghana has a future, your country?
Right.
Or what's your perspective?
Yes. Well, as far as Ghana, and really this applies to any African country that has been colonized.
Yes.
We have to figure out, are we done being colonized? Mm. Right? If we are, so what are the things that we actually control? What are the, because if you are colonized, you are not colonized, you should be able to control all sectors of your government, your country. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case. We are not in control of most things, right? Because as a country, we have leaders who have to go outside and beg for money. Even though we are depositing our reserves in European banks, right? Our leaders still have to go outside and beg for money. That is not a good example for the youth. We are still importing food that we should be able to grow. Africa has some of the most, like 80% of the world's arable land is in Africa.
Yeah.
So why are we importing food?
That's a very good question right there. So that will also trigger a question saying that a lot of African countries have gained independence, right?
Right.
So what is preventing African countries from developing their own things?
Right.
And be self-reliant. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of things, progress that have been advocated in Africa.
Yes.
I know there's a lot of things going on in Nigeria, even in Kenya, like the tech hub is big in Kenya. Mm-hmm. In Nigeria, there's some productions. I think some vehicles are either manufactured or assembled in Nigeria, also in South Africa.
Right.
You know, and we have so many other things. For instance, Ghana also has a lot of cocoa and other minerals. So do many African countries. So, and then we have a lot of Africans who are educated both domestically and also people who live in the diaspora who are educated. So the knowledge is there, the resource is there.
Okay. Right.
So what do you think gets in the way of Africans of doing
Do you
their
really
own
want
thing?
Me to go in there? It will be a little controversial.
Controversial.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, I follow Dr. Arikana Chiroborikwal. You know about her?
I haven't.
She's the former U.S. African Union ambassador to the U.S.
Okay. All right.
And she came out exposing a lot of the misdeeds of our so-called past colonial masters.
Okay.
And she exposed, being from her vantage point as the African Union ambassador, she exposed how they are still pulling the strings behind closed doors of Africa. Mm-hmm. And how they have still interest in keeping Africa underdeveloped.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard those kinds of ideas.
Right. I've heard them.
Although, yes, Africa, we ourselves, we can get up and develop things. But think about it. Has it not been tried before? What did Kwame Nkrumah try to do? And what happened to him? You know, Kwame Nkrumah was trying to bring Africa together. He was trying to get us truly independent. We are not truly independent right now. He was trying to get us truly independent, come up with our own monetary system, connect Africa for commerce.
So those leaders of that time,
they tried.
The Kwame Nkrumahs, the Nyereres, Jomo Kenyatta, the Kaundes.
You are right.
Yeah. So
many of our leaders, our revolutionary leaders who rise up to lead us into a positive way, into independence, they get cut off.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Kwame Nkrumah, what's his name? The one from Burkina, that was Rawlings' friend.
Thomas Sankara. Okay.
And the one from Congo, Lumumba. So many more.
Okay.
Every time they get up to do these things, because in order for us to be independent, we have to control our economy.
Mm.
We cannot even control commerce between ourselves.
Mm.
We are not allowed to.
Okay.
You know, although we have ECOWAS, but there are still some restrictions.
Okay. That's interesting. You know, like we try and touch different subjects here, right? Mm-hmm. So it's good that you brought that up. But I know you also lived in Mali.
Yes.
And there are some changes also going on in Mali.
Yes.
Burkina Faso. Which I believe in Niger. And I read on those and listen to them. And I think they're trying to they've kicked away.
The ties
with France and stuff like that.
It's long overdue.
Okay.
It's long overdue. Look at how that young man, the young leader in Burkina Faso,
yes.
Look at how fast he's trying to develop the country.
Mm.
Look, he's investing massively in agriculture.
Mm.
He's investing massively in the people, teaching skills so people can actually work and earn a living.
Yeah.
That's why I mentioned the food, because that's critical. We have bought into the notion that cocoa, coffee and tea, Africa. We need to do that to supply to the West. If we can bring the West in to buy our cocoa, then we are happy. While we are neglecting our food industry. There's no reason why we should be able to import chicken from China. Or we should do it at all. Yeah. Why would we import chicken from China?
Because I remember growing up, sometimes I would go to the village and even within the cities locally in Africa, we raised chicken and other animals as well. And on a larger scale, I'm not really sure whether there were any major factory. I think there was one in Ghana called Dako Farms or so.
Okay.
If you don't get me wrong, there is, yeah. So, yeah, but that's interesting to know that even chicken is being imported.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So many fish, and they are competing with the local producers.
Okay.
And at a very disadvantage to the local producers.
Okay.
Because the Chinese will bring in their chicken at half the price of what the locals are selling it. And their chicken, because it's been pumped up with steroids and, you know, all kinds of hormones and antibiotics, they are huge.
Okay.
You see, and to the local, the people, the indigents, when they see that, they think, oh, wow, I'm getting more bang for my buck. But they don't understand the powers that are at play behind these things. If we are eventually not able to produce our own food at all, right? Think about the GMO seeds that are being brought into Africa. Those seeds have a lifespan. You cannot continue planting them forever.
Okay.
After a few seasons of planting, the seed will not work again. So you have to continuously go back to the supplier, which is coming from Europe and China and all these places, to buy seed.
Right.
But if we ourselves independently have our own local seeds that are our old seeds that we always planted with, or we develop our own seeds, let's take it there, develop our own seeds. Nobody can come and starve us to say, if you don't do this, you will not get food.
Right.
But if we continue in the way we are doing, it's very easy to manipulate us. You know?
Absolutely. So, so what would be your message to politicians in Africa if you were given a platform to send a message?
I would say it might not be easy, but you have to be bold and you have to be courageous. You have to be brave. When the West comes with those ideas, you know that it is not in the best interest of your people, but it is in the interest of your own pocket. If you go ahead with those kinds of deals, then you are a murderer. That's all I can say. Then you are a murderer because you are actually committing genocide on their people. Because in many years to come, we will not be existing if we continue in this way. If you continue to sign those deals where they are bringing fake seeds to us, or you are letting them import their food products instead of empowering the local farmer, then you are committing genocide. That's plain and simple.
Yeah.
Which kind of people would allow for another people to control their food source?
Yeah.
That makes no sense whatsoever. It's never done. Unless you've completely given up and you've decided, yes, we want to be slaves to these people forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right. So thank you very much. Definitely there is a lot of investments that we need to do in Africa. Invest into ourselves, support African
local
goods and products.
Yes.
Yeah, I know that in some other countries like the US and stuff like that, there are certain projects, even mm-hmm. like if you do projects and it's federally funded, mm-hmm. the stipulations where you have to have a greater percentage of Buy America
yes.
products, even equipment.
Right.
So Africa has to look into those things where they came African countries, you know, mm-hmm. I'm saying generally, because this is typical in a lot of African countries where mm-hmm. we need to improve on that. So great insight on that. So I know you do a lot of reading, right? So have you, what's something interesting that you've read recently that you would like to share?
Ooh. Yeah. that one might be too controversial.
More than the political yes. question?
Yes, that one, no.
No.
But what I've actually, part of it, of what I read was, it was actually inspired by Wodemeyer's video about going to Suriname.
Okay.
And, you know, he was talking about some of the culture there. There are some people he found, some Maroons he found in Suriname, who have founded a village that they named Dahomey.
Okay.
Right. And so
Dahomey, that's the previous name for Benin.
For Benin.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That was Benin's old name. Yeah. But according to the story narrated in Wodemeyer's video, there was a man who came from that the Benin Dahomey, and when he broke free as a Maroon,
yeah.
he settled a place and he named that place Dahomey.
Dahomey.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I was reading about that because, you know, with slavery, mm-hmm. you know, they had a lot of slavery.
Right.
And the European slavers actually empowered certain kingdoms mm-hmm. who then used that power to raid their neighbors who were not as unified.
Okay.
So you have like the Asante, for example.
Okay.
There you have the Dahomey also. Then you have the Oyo. Those three kingdoms were actually the main raiders when it comes to, you know, capturing people.
Okay.
Not that because they just really, really want to do it, but at its inception, you either play or you be played.
So this is capturing people into slavery.
Yes.
That even went to the diaspora, like
right,
the Americans.
To be selling them.
To be selling them.
And unfortunately, we, the Ebe people, were nestled right between those three kingdoms.
Okay.
And so if you look at the old maps, you will see that they labeled all of Ebe land the slave coast.
Okay. So that's the tribe that you belong to.
Right.
And then you teach extensively on that.
Right.
Okay.
So when they take those people from there into the Americas and the Caribbean and all that, they dubbed them Dahomey slaves,
okay.
Asante slaves, Yoruba slaves, or Oyo slaves.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that those people are actually Asantes or Dahomeans or Yorubas and everything.
Okay.
But majority of them were actually from the other ethnic groups that were, you know, surrounding those kingdoms,
mm-hmm.
predominantly the other people.
Yeah, yeah.
So it interested me when when I heard that they named that town Dahomey,
mm-hmm.
because I was like, well, you know, Dahomey, if somebody says this is somebody who was captured from Dahomey, it doesn't necessarily mean that the person is Fong.
Yeah.
The person most likely was an Ewe person or an Aja person, which is also another ethnic group, another clan of the Ewes.
Yeah.
So I went searching into that, and I found that some of their traditions and customs really mirrored what we do back home as well.
Right.
Yeah. So okay. That was what I was reading. I can't remember the title of the book to tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, but you know, just really quickly, another one that I was reading that actually I started yesterday. I had it on my Audible. I still have it. I'm not done. It's like 600 pages.
Okay.
It's called Hebrews, Africans, or Does It Matter? And this is a recently released book.
Okay.
This, it was released in June by an African-American brother called Rodney Jones.
Okay, Rodney Jones.
Yeah, he is one of my Ewe students.
Okay.
So he learns Ewe in my Ewe class, and I've known him for years. He had a channel called The World's Best Kept Secret on YouTube, and guess what? He had like 50,000 subscribers on that channel, and YouTube killed it.
Oh, but YouTube killed it? Okay.
Yes, YouTube killed it because he was bringing so many things out.
Mm.
So the best thing that for him to do then was to put all that knowledge into a book.
Into a book.
Which he has, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So there's a lot of knowledge out there, and there are a lot of Africans doing a lot of podcasts and writing books and stuff like that. So it really interests me, the things that you do, your research-based stuff, and then also the teachings that you do. So if anybody wants to participate in your in your teachings, how can
okay, well, for the Ewe language class, for example, you can send an email to Ewe, that is EWE, language class at gmail.com.
All right.
Okay. Now, for my teachings on African history, culture, and linguistics, you can go to Hebrew the Black Man. Okay. You can just type at Hebrew the Black Man in either YouTube or Facebook or Instagram, and you'll find my teachings there.
Have you written any book so far?
So I'm working with one of my fellow scholars.
Okay.
Yeah, to bring out a book. We're doing pretty good with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. So this is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all define success in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I look at your profile, and you know, I look at things, I feel and believe that you've been successful about, you know, teaching self-awareness of certain culture of people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know you do dwell specifically with
Ewe people,
but
right.
It's also a template for other African tribes to actually encourage and teach people their identity. Right. Well, how do you define success?
Well, you know, a long time ago, I used to be a part of one of these groups, the self-help, you know, groups. And they taught me that I like this quote really stuck with me, even though I did not continue with them. And they said, success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. And I've adopted that as my definition of success. It's not the end goal, but it is actually you doing the thing that is taking you to the end goal gradually and just keeping with it, not giving up. Yeah. That's success.
Yeah. And I also like the way you embrace the African culture, even as you live in the United States. You've embraced, you have taught people
absolutely.
People are always curious and ask you things, and you go deep, and people appreciate that, right? Yeah. So I've seen that happen a lot. So with everything that you've worked on so far.
Yeah.
And what legacy do you want to leave?
Ha, That's a tough one.
Because I really consider you're a young African lady, yeah. Still, and you've done a lot of things, right?
Yes.
So there are many years to come.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but what is the legacy that you want to leave? How you're already impacting lives of, especially young ladies, you know, to inspire certain things, to have that self-identity in African origin.
Mm-hmm.
But what will be that one where you will say, this is the legacy that I want to leave?
Yeah. So I want my teachings currently and the teachings to come, right? Because there's a lot I haven't released. And part of that is also, like you said, I'm a family woman.
Mm.
So I wouldn't trade it for the world, but, you know, everything in its due time.
Mm.
But I want my teachings to inspire people, you know, to be their best selves.
Mm.
And also to have that collective mindset as we are Africans. I am my brother's keeper.
Mm-hmm.
We have bought too much into the Western individualistic mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Our ancestors always thought collectively.
Yes.
Always. There was nothing like individualism.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we have that saying, a child is raised, it takes a village to raise a child.
And you're absolutely right. In many African countries, communal identities there. Even like in Kenya, they have I think they call it Harambe. I've seen a lot of Kenyans mobilize for a common cause, even in the diaspora, you know, so that,
So if I can inspire people to at least move from that individual mindset to that collectivist mindset, I think we can achieve great things.
Okay. So there's this story that my uncle used to tell me that back in the days in a village, they took turns. It's interesting because it was a communal labor, right?
Yes.
They took turns to build each other's houses.
Huts. Thank you. And even do the farm.
Mm-hmm.
They took like back in the days, if you started a farm,
mm-hmm.
you will bring your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Your friends will come and will weed for you.
Mm-hmm.
They will, even at the harvest, they will come and harvest for you. And all of you will move to another friend's farm and do the work together. There's no money exchanged.
Okay.
But, you know, when you all came and did the work together, definitely you say, okay, you take this many ears of corn, you take this many tubers of yam, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so you took care of each other. Everybody
took care of each other. Okay. Even the women. So beautifully, let me tell you this. You know, are we okay on time?
Yes, we are. We have a few minutes. We'll be running up one or two.
You know, when the women back in the day, when they had their menses, they had a separate hut for women when they had their menses. During that time, because the woman was not to come and cook for the man, she's not to share meal with anybody when she had her menses. So guess what? That was a little sister hangout place because like three or four of them will have menses at the same time and others will cook and bring to them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're by yourself, what do? You still cook for your husband.
Yeah.
You still take care of everything,
right.
Which according to our ancestors, we shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a woman is on her menses, that's a delicate time. She's emotional. Her emotions are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Her body is in physical turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good time for her to rest. So other people to take care of her. She shouldn't have to go cook. She shouldn't have to, you know, for that whole week.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't do that anymore because now we are individualistic. Everybody for themselves. God for us all.
Yeah. And we sit in a political world right now.
Yes.
Affecting that because everybody is just individualistic and trying to grow for himself.
Exactly.
Well, Seram, it's been an honor to have you here. So for what message would you want to send to our viewers to uplift them to not give up, you know, on whatever they're trying to pursue in your life. Okay, so I know you, you deal specifically with a lot of, you know, Africans.
Like, and African-Americans.
And African-Americans as well. So what is, what's your final pitch to uplift people? You know, because sometimes we all go to moments where we are downtrodden and we feel like giving up on what we believe or what we're working on.
Right.
What can you say to uplift people and encourage them?
Okay. Well, absolutely don't give up. Absolutely don't give up. Because as long as there is breath, as long as there is life, there is still tomorrow. Right? And make it so that your life story is about the success of our people. You see, just like I shared earlier, that we need to have our ambition towards being more collectivist than individualist. If you are thinking collectively, there are certain decisions that you will, you just cannot make. You cannot think about taking your life. Right? Even if you think about it, you think, okay, what about my people?
Yes.
What about my family? My family?
Yes.
What about my community?
Yeah.
If you are thinking about others other than just yourself, you will strategize for tomorrow. You will plan, right? You will know how to manage your money. Even if you don't know how, you look for ways to to learn how to manage your money because you are thinking of tomorrow.
Yes.
Right? It's in an ever proverb says, choli. That means the if I say it in English, it just loses its meaning. You know, English doesn't have that power when it comes to our proverbs, but I'll try. It says, when the pig eats, it says, there's tomorrow, there's tomorrow, there's tomorrow. So anyways, I just say that to say, you know, we should always be thinking about tomorrow, right? That we should always think that tomorrow is better. But today, we are not going to give up today. We are always going to do our best all the time. I remember a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. And he actually quoted from the Bible when he said, everything you do, do it as if you are doing it for the Lord. And that really resonates with me. I really actually try to think of that whenever I'm trying to do anything, pretty much. And I instilled it in the children.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. We just want to say thank you to you, Sarah, for taking this invitation and coming and sharing. I know we just scratched the surface of what you bring onto the table, but this is very uplifting. Okay. Well, we sincerely thank you. From Uplift Chronicles, thank you very much. And see you guys soon.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Uplift Chronicles. I hope you found inspiration in today's stories and the spirit of upliftment. Remember, every life has the power to inspire change, and every story is a thread in the rich tapestry of our shared heritage. If you enjoyed this episode, kindly subscribe and leave a review, and share it with someone who could use a little upliftment in their life. Follow us on social media for more updates and join the conversation. Until next time, keep uplifting and stay inspired. Signing off, this is Kofi Dake.